On today's episode, Liz and I are joined by Dr. Dave Dollahite, a professor from Brigham Young University. Dave shares some insights and lessons learned on faith and religion from his research group's interviews with nearly 300 happy and religious couples. He talks about why religion can play such a pivotal role in relationships, and we discuss the challenges some couples face when it comes to religious differences and interfaith marriages. Dr. David Dollahite is a professor of family life at Brigham Young University. He received an MS and MFT and is a family life coach. He is co-director of the American Families of Faith Project. He has more than 200 publications for scholarly and public audiences. He has written or edited 9 books on family life and religion, including Home-Centered Gospel Learning and Living, Strengths in Diverse Families of Faith, Religion and Families, and Successful Marriages and Families, among other books. He and his wife, Mary, have been married for 40 years and have 7 children and 4 grandchildren. We hope you enjoy the show. Hey friends, welcome to another episode of the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. I'm Dr. Dave here at Utah State University alongside our therapist and psychologist, Dr. Liz Hale. We are doing our very best to bring you some research, some tips, some tools to help you create the marriage of your dreams. Today, I'm excited for our discussion. We're going to be talking about faith and religion and spirituality and what the research says about both of these areas as it relates to couples. So welcome to the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast, Dr. Dave Dollahite.
Thanks for having me. It's great to be with you guys.
Likewise. Yeah, man. Now, Dave, you've been studying religion and spirituality and faith and how all this can influence individuals and couples for decades now. In fact, I was an undergraduate student, right, at BYU in one of your courses years ago. And I remember some of this just at the beginning of this. And so I'm interested now after 3 decades of all this research you've been doing. Can you tell us really about what you've been studying recently? You mentioned as before we began about this 300 religious couples that you've been interviewing. Tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, so it has been a fun ride. About 25 years we've been doing religion and family data with folks of many faiths. It's been a blast to interview highly religious couples from many faith backgrounds. Let me give you just a little bit of social science background. For decades, there was a pretty negative bias in the social sciences and clinical sciences against religion. Started off with Karl Marx and Sigmund Freud and Albert Ellis and others who just had theories that religion was going to be harmful. But like that great saying says, you know, here's another poor, innocent theory murdered by a brutal gang of facts. And so the good news is that now we have thousands of studies, good social science studies that show that on average for most people, religion tends to be helpful for them in mental health, physical health, relational health. And so in the area of marriage and family relationships that I've focused on, we have literally hundreds and hundreds of studies showing that religion on average tends to benefit couples. Now, on the other hand, we also have some research that we've done as well as some others have done that shows that religion can be harmful. If religion is lived in extreme ways and dysfunctional ways and kind of oppressive ways, religion can actually be quite harmful in relationships. So we've done both of that. Yeah, we've interviewed a little over 300 couples from many different faith backgrounds, about 20 Christian denominations, the 3 major Jewish denominations or branches, the 2 major branches in Islam. Our samples about from all the states, half of our sample is from various racial and ethnic minority families, about a quarter of our sample are first generation Americans. So we've got religious diversity and all other kinds of diversities reflected in our sample. Religion can, excuse me. I should also say, by the way, most of those studies that have been done are quantitative studies that do statistical analyses and have found dozens of kinds of analyses and variables that on average, more religious people tend to do better in physical health and mental health, and more religious couples tend to do better in their marriage. And you know, there's lots of reasons for that. And so our point, the purpose of our research is to try to figure out why it is that so many studies find these positive connections between religiosity and relationship strength. So our research has done in-depth interviews asking religious couples how they think that religion and spirituality and faith has made a difference in their marriages and their families. So we're talking to people that are kind of exemplar couples that are, you know, highly involved in their faith community that were recommended to us by their religious leaders, and, you know, that are happily married. Each, you know, the average length of marriage was 20 years. We had a criteria they had to be married at least 7 years. They had to be happily married, because we wanted to look at, you know, what's really going on with religious couples. Why do religious beliefs and practices and communities seem to make a difference?
Well, I wish we had the time to do a deep dive into all the things you've learned, Dave, through this study of 300 religious couples. But can you share some of the favorite highlights that you have found through the study, please? What stands out?
Yeah, so kind of a core idea is that shared faith that is a substantial faith. The research shows that if someone is sort of nominally religious, occasionally religious, it doesn't tend to make much of a difference in life. People need to sort of have a certain threshold of religiosity. And the research shows that, you know, it's sort of the divider is those who go pretty regularly, like around at least once a week or so, go to services, that they have that religion matters to them, that they consider it to be an important part of their life. And that they typically have some personal spiritual practices, prayer, sacred text study, mindfulness, meditation, you know, whatever their practices are. And we found that couples who have a pretty good level of shared faith, on average, are likely to have all kinds of resources and benefits that come from their beliefs and practices and faith communities that help them out. Help them to resolve issues, to develop what we call relational virtues, you know, patience and forgiveness and kindness and humility and so forth. And that religiosity tends to encourage both personal virtues that can help in relationships, and it encourages relational processes like, you know, confessing your sins to God, asking for forgiveness from each other, praying for help from God in your relationship challenges, searching your sacred texts for guidance and direction and answers, receiving strength and support from your faith community that can help with stresses and challenges in your relationship.
Bottom line, faith is a strength.
It is. For most couples, most of the time. But yeah, there are certainly ways in which religion can be lived out in a person's life or in their marriage that end up not being helpful at all.
Mm-hmm. Dave, just for clarification, and when you talk about, you know, we throw out terms like religiosity and religious practices and religious and spirituality, can you just briefly talk about some of the nuances there about what you study and any different findings as it relates to marriage, you know, belief, practice, community, and how all that influences couples?
Yeah, great question. So in the social sciences, they do tend to separate out spirituality and religion. And spirituality tends to be treated and measured as sort of personal connection with God and, you know, kind of a sense of love of God and connection with other with divine beings and practices. Religiosity tends to be more about, are you involved in a faith community? Are you, you know, a kind of a regular participant in a congregation, a parish, a mosque, a synagogue? And you know, faith is kind of a generic term, like faith community tends to apply across religions. Although turns out that religious belief or faith is more important in some faiths, for example, Christianity, than it tends to be in other faiths, for example, Judaism, in which observances or practices, traditions and rituals tend to be, if not as, if not more important, at least as important as beliefs. And so our approach tends to be, you could sort of divide it into three groups, like faith community, like, are you attending services? Are you serving in your community? Do you look to religious traditions? Do you look to religious leaders for authority, for guidance, for direction? Are you likely to go talk to a pastor, a rabbi, a priest, an imam, maybe go see a secular therapist, or perhaps both? In terms of, spiritual practices, how likely are you to make regular prayer a meaningful part of your life? Do you study the sacred texts of your faith? Do you have traditions and rituals that are important to you on a daily or a weekly or, a seasonally basis? And then, beliefs are, what do you think about God? What do you think the purpose of life is? What do you consider the reasons for marriages? How do you deal with stresses and conflicts? And so we tend to focus on beliefs, practices, and communities kind of in conjunction with each other. We also focus on religious experiences or spiritual experiences, when people have transcendent and meaningful experiences with God, and how does that affect their marriage and family life.
You learned all kinds of years through the years, Dr. Dave Dollahite, about studying couples and religion. How does that information relevant now to those who might be listening and viewing who are in the mate selection stage of life?
Yeah.
What's your advice for them?
Yeah. So obviously when people are looking for someone to marry, looking for a life partner, they tend to focus on things that they think are important. It might be looks, might be shared interests, might be shared beliefs. It is interesting that the whole chemistry and excitement and new love and romance and all that tends to be kind of physical, and it's easy for people to get caught up in kind of the more physical, material, kind of secular interest kinds of things. And those are fine, and it's nice to have shared things in those. Many couples, many individuals who are, in that process of choosing someone to marry may not really think, unless they take their faith quite seriously, they may not realize how important it is to try to find someone with some degree of shared faith and ideally some degree of kind of being at the same place or on the same page religiously. Like, are you both highly committed? Are you both not that involved in your faith? Is one of you highly committed and the other one doesn't really care about faith that much? And so, in some ways, every marriage is an interfaith marriage, right? Every couple has to work through religious and spiritual differences in terms of how they think that their faith life ought to go. So in some cases, even if you're both Catholic or both Jewish or both LDS, you probably are going to have some differences and likely some significant differences that need to be worked through. There needs to be compromise and maybe creating some new reality together that wasn't part of either of your families of origin, but you create that together. Most couples will need to do some of that, but the research does show that interfaith marriages do tend to struggle more. It's just a little harder to get on the same page, especially once children arrive. If you're coming from a very different place religiously, or even if you're in the same faith, both Catholic, both Jewish, both Baptist, but one of you is all in on your faith and the other one not so much. And so, a couple individuals that are thinking about who they'd like to marry and would a marriage with this person likely work out? Faith, religiosity, religious commitments and values should probably be one of those things that's looked at. And research shows, that premarital surveys like the Relate survey at BYU that you mentioned, before we started talking, shows it's very important for couples to think about that, to talk about that. I mean, if neither of you are religious and that's both clear to both of you, it probably won't be a big issue. If you're both religious and there's some differences, that's likely going to be an issue. And if you're if one of you's approach and kind of style of being religious in a same faith is quite different, you're probably going to have some fun conversations and have to make some fun compromises.
Very good.
Yeah, it sounds like that, Dave. I'm curious because it feels like, I don't know if your research shows this, but almost a maybe a faith crisis, maybe some are calling it, where one or even both maybe aren't where we start out in the newlywed years, or engaged. This isn't what I thought it was going to be, or things change over time. And it sounds like it depends. You know, if faith is really a strong part of the relationship, at least at the beginning, but then for one, something happens and maybe some changes and I believe some other things, or they don't want to practice as much in this or that area. I want to pick Liz's brain here, Liz. I'm curious, in your practice and Dave, in your research showing kind of what's happening, it feels like today, where faith isn't as strong. And maybe you've seen this, Dave, over the last several decades, that it's becoming, less and less of an important part of people's lives and relationships. First, let me ask you, is that true? Do you kind of see this, you know, this decrease in faith on average overall? And then I'd love to pick your brains about the differences, not just in interfaith, but kind of faithfulness in what we said we were going to do.
Yeah, those are great questions. And it's a complex issue. Certainly, there have been reductions in religiosity over the last couple of generations. The younger generations are not as religious as their parents and grandparents were. Part of that, it's there's lots of possible reasons. Part of it is that people are now much more willing to admit that they're not religious and to sort of acknowledge that in their social circles and to themselves, to their parents. So to some extent, part of that might just be that it's less socially discouraged now. It's not, you know, so much of a scandal or you're not considered to be somehow morally problematic if you're not religious. And that was more the case in previous years. So that's part of it. Yes, there's a great book written by an Episcopal youth minister, David Zoll. The book's called Seculosity. And he demonstrates, you know, that yes, there has been an increase in secularity in the world. However, it's quite interesting that for many people, their non-religious pursuits, their parenting, their career, their hobbies, their gaming, their sports, their art, their exercise, many kinds of things, they actually approach those more secular things in a pretty religious way. And so he used the word seculosity, you know, that it's kind of a religion of people being all in their secular pursuits. I just read a book recently called Cultish, in which she argues that actually it's not only the case that people are treating their kind of more secular pursuits kind of with religious fervor, they're actually becoming pretty cultish about their exercise regimen, you know, their yoga regimen or their mindfulness or their diet or their, you know, parenting or their whatever their group interests are. In other words, human beings are going to be religious. They're going to be spiritual. In some ways, it's that more traditional, institutionalized forms of religion have taken a hit, but people are still, you know, pretty excited and pretty passionate about things. They're pretty religious about their secular pursuits. So that is the case. And then you mentioned the case where, you know, what happens when they come into the marriage in a shared faith and they, you know, sort of marry by a rabbi or a priest or an imam or a bishop or an LDS temple. And then one person or both changes, you know, loses interest or switches faith. And yeah, the about 30 interfaith couples that we've interviewed about more than 300 couples. Only 10% of those were interfaith couples. The rest were in shared faiths. Although 30 were actually not at all religious. And so that's another interesting thing. Happily married couples who aren't religious. But back to the interfaith. We found clearly difference between those who entered the marriage with the understanding, you know, we're going to have an interfaith marriage. You know, we understand that's part of it. We've talked with each other about what that might be like. We're going into it understanding that we're going to have to negotiate. We're going to have to kind of make decisions at some point about, do we take turns? Do we go to both? Are we going to both of us go to one? What do we do with kids? Are kids going to be circumcised or baptized or confirmed or bar and bat mitzvah? You know, what are we going to do? And we found that, not surprisingly, it's one thing when couples enter into a marriage knowing that it is going to be interfaith, and that's kind of part of the contract of the marriage. You know, we're going to have to work through this. It's another thing when one person decides, yeah, this is not for me anymore. I'm going to switch, or I'm going to switch off. Then that obviously brings all kinds of relationship issues. You know, to what extent does a couple decide that that's going to be a make or break issue for them, or that they're going to stay together and work on having a strong marriage, which may no longer be built on the foundation of a shared faith, shared religious commitments. But now it's based on love and history and shared parenting and maybe finding other shared interests or values. And we found couples do all kinds of things to try to, you know, both those who enter into a marriage knowing it's interfaith, and then those who experience, one or both people experience a faith crisis or changes their faith, that communicating together, being committed to trying to work well together, trying to find new interests, new shared meaning and values are really important.
We'll be right back after this brief message. And we're back. Well, let's dive right in. Liz, I'm curious. I'm going to put you on the spot here. In your practice, it seems like if one feels like it's a big deal or religion's a big deal, then it's a big deal. If just one does, have you seen struggles with interfaith, with lack of faith? How in the couples you've seen?
So it's just so darn painful too. And betrayal comes up an awful lot. Not just the one partner who feels betrayed that you, my partner, you've changed the direction of our course here. You know, you changed on me, right? We agreed to be, usually I see LDS couples where one of the partners has left. And so the partner who has not left just feels very betrayed. Now the partner who has left, guess what? They also feel betrayed, but in a different way. They typically will mention feeling betrayed by their faith. They find out that things are not as they thought they were, right? They've got a hold of some literature or research or something that made them question and doubt. And so they feel betrayed. At least they have that in common. They can come to some sort of understanding of what it's like to be betrayed, to be betrayed. And it's just so painful. I hear just a lot of yearning from both hearts. The yearning of the person who has left the faith feeling like, can't you just see it from my perspective? Don't you want to learn the things I've been learning? Can't you be open to that? Can't you have some empathy for me? And the person who has stayed in the faith is saying the same thing. Imagine what it's like for me. So I think when couples can really put themselves in the shoes of the other, they can make progress, but boy, it is just not an easy route. My heart goes out to them. They do have to try harder than the average couple, I find.
That's very well said. That our research bears out those same kinds of things.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm curious with both of you. Another question that popped in my head is related to extended family. Sometimes, you know, parents, I've seen parents who are just heartbroken because of how much faith means to them. And then they see their children either another faith or no faith or go a different way. Anything, Dave, I'm curious with extended family, or is it just the couples that you interview? Do they ever talk about the influence of family, extended family on their faith?
Yeah, our own research hasn't done much of that. We've just looked at the marital relationship. We've learned that we had to sort of make some tough choices and hone in on certain faiths. Like, we've studied the Abrahamic faith. We haven't gone out into Buddhism or Hinduism or other non-Abrahamic faiths. And we've just focused on marriages and kind of parent-child relationships. But extended families are likely going to be influenced and try to influence this. There's likely going to be a sense of disappointment. Parents of the couple are likely going to be trying to, you know, influence their child and maybe the couple in ways that are surprising to them. They're likely going to be disappointed and unhappy. So yeah, there's it, when one person make, well, I guess the better way to say it is personal religious choices, beliefs, values, commitments, obviously impact individuals, but they also strongly impact other people, siblings, parents, couples, kids, or I mean, spouses, kids. So, it's fascinating that, you know, in America, in America, we often focus on individuals and we're kind of pretty individualistic culture. And, you know, there's some benefits to strong focus on personal rights and personal choices and personal, agency. That's great. However, the reality is that we are all embedded in powerful relationships and meaningful and important relationships in our lives. And so personal choices, and often people don't realize, they think, why should you care what I believe or what I do? I get to do my own thing. Okay. But marriages are, you know, as the scriptures say, you know, from two to one, you know, that you're now one flesh, you're one being, you're one entity. And when one person makes a significant change of any kind, including religious changes, that's, of course, going to impact both their spouse and their kids and probably their siblings and probably their parents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm curious, Dave. Sorry, Liz. I got more questions here. I'm popping into my mind. Let's say I'm a newly married couple, or I'm even an engaged couple, and I hear about Dr. Dalhite's research and, hey, honey, let's sit down and talk with him. So we're sitting down and talking with you, and they say, hey, share with us, what's your best advice? What are some tips and advice that you have for us as this engaged or newly married couple? Share some tips from your research. What do you share with them?
Yeah. So overarching factor for me is religious commitment in the context of relational commitment. So it's a nexus. It's a hybrid, a connection, a crossroads. For me, religion on its own is interesting. Relationships on their own are interesting, but it's that connection between religion and relationships. And so being relational about your religion, being religious about your relationships, answering the big questions that religion often poses. Who am I? What's my identity? What's my relationship to God? What does God expect of me? What are my core beliefs and values? And then, so those kinds of individual questions are important to try to sort through, try to have a clear understanding of. But then as you come together as a couple, and as you stay together and grow and change and, you know, evolve as a couple through life, because every relationship grows and changes and evolves, how can we keep the sort of faith and family connection, the kind of religion and relationships interface uppermost in our minds? Because when you bring the power and kind of the influence of religion and the power and influence of relationships together in harmonious, balanced, healthy ways, then great things can happen. However, if the relationship has serious dysfunction, or if your approach to religion is problematic, if you don't honor other people's choices and lives and personalities and preferences, then religion can be a real problem. So finding ways to live your faith in healthy ways within your relationships, that's what it's all about. And that's what the bulk of our research, and you mentioned, you know, potential viewers might want to sort of know more. We have a YouTube channel, the American Families of Faith YouTube channel, where we have many, many videos, podcasts, audio articles, you know, for people who like to get their content through their ears. We have lots of books and online articles as well. So people who prefer to read, we have lots of information. And a lot of that was originally written for social science audiences. You know, so it has methodologies and theories and all the kind of social science jargon. But in the last 5 years or so, we've really tried to take as much of that content, those findings, those ideas as possible, and put them in a format that's of more interest to a general audience. So we've done the podcast. We've done lots of, we have a wonderful video professional, Laura McKeegan, who's helped. And I should have said from the beginning, my colleague and friend, Dr. Lauren Marks, who I work with here at BYU, we're co-directors of the American Families of Faith Project. You know, we've tried to make sure that this information is sound and is, you know, published in high quality social science journals. So it's kind of been through the peer review process. It's been challenged by people who are not religious and who are not of our faith. So the ideas are sound and grounded in good theory and good research. But then we've tried recently to make it much more accessible for folks who don't want to go in and read the big long social science articles.
Mm-hmm. And where is that, Dave? Website?
Yeah, so our American Families of Faith website is americanfamiliesoffaith.byu.edu. And then our YouTube channel, just go on YouTube and just do American Families of Faith channel, and it'll pop up with all that kind of content that's there. And then our podcasts are on most major podcast platforms.
Great. And we'll put links to all of that in our show notes of this podcast. So thanks for those resources. Dave, we'd like to ask, as we wrap up here, all of our guests, a couple of questions. The first one is, in your mind, what is the key to a stronger marriage connection?
Humility. I think when each person in a marriage is humble about their own perspectives, their own attitudes, their own ideas about what should happen in a marriage, I think humility is sort of that core virtue that allows people to see good, see truth, see meaning and value in the other person. I mean, obviously, profound commitment is really important. I mean, in many ways, commitment is the kind of overarching relationship issue. If one or both people aren't committed to the relationship and to trying to make the relationship work, it's going to be hard to make it. But then when you combine humility with commitment, then you have commitment to the person, commitment to the relationship, commitment to going through whatever you need to go through with that, with your loved one, to solve whatever issues you have that are issues between you or issues that you're facing. And then humility is sort of that characteristic or quality that allows you to channel your commitment in ways that are likely to lead to reconciliation, to forgiveness, to be able to move through the pains and challenges that every single marriage experiences. My wife and I have been married for just over 40 years, and we're very different people. I'm a convert to the LDS faith. She's a lifelong fifth generation Latter-day Saint. We're both profoundly committed to God and to our faith and to the restored gospel, but we're very different in our in most aspects of our life. And so, 40 years of marriage has taught me that usually when there's a problem or a difference that is hard to resolve, it's because I'm being prideful, I'm being arrogant, I'm being selfish. When I humble myself and ask God to help me, and that's one of the things that, why religion is so valuable and powerful, is that we are all full of pride. We're all pretty selfish. We all think that we're right. We all like to have things go our way. And when people turn to God, to their sacred texts, to their faith leaders, to the core tenets of their faith, most people have reported to us that they find that helps them to put God above themselves, to put the relationship above themselves, to put the other person above themselves, to be humble and kind and patient and forgiving. Because when God forgives us, then we know we have to forgive the other person. When God is humble and patient and kind and generous and gracious to us, then we want to reach out and do that for our spouse. So for me, yeah, it's kind of religious commitment and relational humility. Yeah. Sorry, that was two. I know you said one, but
beautiful.
No, that I can't just pick one either. And I love both of those.
Oh, and I can go on with many others, but those are the two that came to mind.
Yeah, no, that's great. Yeah, we won't hold you to those. Another that thing that we do here on the podcast, Dave, is our takeaway of the day. If there's a take home message, something that you hope our listeners will remember from our discussion today, what would that be?
Yeah, great question. Together, turn to God, however you understand God, and together seek God's blessings, guidance, comfort, assistance in your relationship. It's hard to make a marriage last in our culture. It's hard to focus on the things that really matter most when there are so many distractions, so many stresses and pressures and changes and demands and dysfunctions and so much pain and hurt and sadness. And life is tough and marriage is tough. And those couples who are able to turn to God together find all kinds of resources, strengths, blessings, benefits, guidance, answers to questions. We've been blessed to get to hear about 700 highly religious people across, you know, faiths and ethnicities and situations talk about the many ways that the fact that they both turn to God, they both take their vows seriously, they both take their faith seriously, that's made all the difference. For many of the couples we've interviewed talk about, you know, we have the same kind of problems that other couples have. We see couples around us, our friends and family and coworkers, we see them having problems in divorcing, having problems in being unfaithful, having problems in being depressed and addicted and all kinds of consequences. And they say, we're no different. We're no better. We have similar challenges. But the fact that we've both been able to turn to God, to our faith values, our shared beliefs, our shared communities and practices has allowed us to weather those relational storms and stay committed to each other despite all the forces that are kind of pulling couples apart.
Yeah, it's powerful. Thanks, Dave. Liz, what about you? What's your takeaway of the day?
So if I understand Dr. Dave, you're saying really that the more in common we have, the more in our emotional bank account. Is that fair to say? So for those couples who do have an interfaith marriage, or for those who have changed course after the marriage, I find that we have something to springboard on where we can find where we are still similar. What are our values that we still share in common, even though I'm still Catholic and you're not Catholic, or you're LDS and I'm not LDS? Where can we still find those similarities? That might be my takeaway. And Dave, what about you? What's your greatest takeaway from our interview today with Dr. Dave Dolehite?
Yeah, thanks, Dave. Something you mentioned earlier, as far as the kind of the religion and the relationship and the intertwining of those, that really resonated with me and my own faith and my journey. It feels like sometimes when either a health crisis or something else has happened in our lives, we, as a couple, we turn to our faith and then it actually brings us closer. And it feels like it brings us closer to with our God as well. And so I like the way that you put that religion and relationship intertwined for many couples as it is for us. And it has really been an anchor and a guide for us. So thank you. Thanks for making time today, Dr. David Dolehite, for coming on and joining us here on the podcast.
Thanks for inviting me. It's been a pleasure to be with you. And thanks for your great work. You do a lot of good to help a lot of couples, and blessings on you.
Likewise, Dave. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much. All right, friends, that's all for us now here at the Stronger Marriage Connection podcast. We'll see you next time.
And do remember, it's the small things that create a stronger marriage connection. Bye-bye now.
Thanks for joining us today. Hey, do us a favor and take a few minutes to subscribe to our podcast and the Utah Marriage Commission YouTube channel, where you can watch this and every episode of the show. When you hit the like button and leave a comment, your feedback helps us improve the show. And don't forget to share this episode with a friend. You can also follow and connect with us on Instagram at Stronger Marriage Life and on Facebook at Stronger Marriage. Be sure to share with us what topics you want us to explore or what you loved about today's episode. If you want even more resources to improve your relationship connection, visit our website at strongermarriage.org, where you'll find free workshops, webinars, relationship surveys, and more. Each episode of Stronger Marriage Connection is hosted and sponsored by the Utah Marriage Commission at Utah State University. And finally, a big thanks to our producers Rex Polanis and Alexis Alcott and the team at Utah State University. And you, our audience, you make this show possible.